again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network. And hopefully along the way, add a little historical context and some factoids for you to boot. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez. This is episode number 8, where we will be taking a look at the television that was taped on Wednesday, February 24th, 1982 at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets on that Saturday, February 27th, 1982. And without any further ado, I'd like to invite my co-host in right now, Roman Gomez. And Roman, we've had a lot of craziness in our lives since we last spoke to everybody. I don't know how deep you want to get into it, but I can tell you this. It is good to be back doing the show with you, my friend.
Yes, it is good to be back. Besides work being crazy, I had lost a buddy of mine that we go back over 30 years. He was a member of Cauliflower Alley Club, a big hardcore wrestling fan. And when I got the news of his passing, that was just devastating. And these past couple weeks have been quite hectic, so to get on the air and do the podcast with you, Mike, is kind of therapeutic. It brings a little bit of normalcy back to my life, and I'm happy to be back here doing the podcast with you.
Yeah, and I tell you what, that is a mutual feeling, my friend. There's work issues that we were both fighting through. I was going to do a solo show. I put out a call to do get some questions from everybody, and I do have some things recorded there, but with me, unfortunately, my mother-in-law passed away this past week when I was trying to finish up doing the question and answer show, so that ended up going sideways, and it was just better to go ahead and wait, and I'm glad that we did, and we do still have some things planned for you, including that question and answer show that is definitely going to make it up. We don't want to short any shows or anything like that, but definitely want to apologize to everybody out there and thank them for sticking with us. And we are very thankful that you're out there and you provide us the distraction that we need. That's what pro wrestling has always been for me, at least. It's always been a great distraction to kind of hide away from some of the tough things that had happened in life. And it was always something to embrace, and it always embraced me, and I'm glad there's people out there. Roman, I'm glad you're here to be able to embrace me at times like this. And man, I'm happy to do this show again. And you know, before we move on, obviously thank you very much for listening to us once again. If you happen to be new and don't know what we're all about, check out our Twitter and our Facebook at Mid-Atlantic Pod. No matter how, what kind of social media it is, whether it be SoundCloud, Instagram, any of that sort of stuff, Mid-Atlantic Pod is where you want to go. But we use Twitter and Facebook mostly as the easiest ways to reach out to people. There you can find two of our very popular everyday features that we do, On This Day in JCP TV History and hashtag Everyday Arn, where we post video clips celebrating the greatness that was Jim Crockett Promotions Television, as well as the greatness that was Double A, the enforcer Arn Anderson. And if you ever want to follow along with us as we review the episodes of this show, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network. I believe the proper address you can go to is watch.wwe.com. If you can't swing the $9.99 a month for that, but you still want to follow along in your own way, you can do that through Mid-Atlantic, the Mid-Atlantic Gateway. Go over there, and David Taub has done reviews of all of the shows that we're doing now. He's got a head start on us by a couple of months, but he has done some great write-ups. I use them when we get prepped to do this show. It's easier to print out what he had written and try to write some notes around that. He does a great job with that stuff, and he's going to be on this show at some point down the line. Really looking forward to having him on there. So that's it. Mid-Atlantic Pod, no matter where you go for your social media. And you know, we'll get back on the horse here for this show. As I mentioned, Saturday, February 27th, 1982 is when this show debuted, and we are in the thick of the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament taking place worldwide. As we talk about the results at the end of the show, we have several tournaments that had taken place. One big one, in fact, in Atlanta, which is probably, Roman, for collectors. When it comes to this tag tournament, I would assume that most people, if they know anything about it at all, it's about the show that took place on February 27th at the Omni, that has floated around for collectors for years, because much of that show ended up being aired on Japanese TV.
Yes, Japanese television was always a great source to get stuff that they didn't show here in the States. They did a lot of stuff like that. Like I have the Brody Gordy barbed wire match from Parade of Champions 3. They never aired that here in the States, to my knowledge, at least, but it was on Japanese television. So any of you fans out there, if you can get a hold of some Japanese DVDs, you'll see a lot of Mid-Atlantic stars, a lot of stuff from the Mid-Atlantic area. If you can get a hold of some of those DVDs from the early 80s.
As we go through the results too, this is probably the most banner week in the history of Private Canoodle, or I'm sorry, of Private Nelson. Private Canoodle would end up reaching some obviously higher highs later on down the road, but as you'll hear in the results section, Private Nelson had himself a hell of a week, and Sonny Fargo was the referee for all of the matches today on our show, so you will hear him yelling at certain points throughout the broadcast. One thing I did, I've always got a kick out of Schwartz and Sonny Fargo, the yelling that they do in the studio and how it sounds in that studio situation. And it's easy to concentrate on Fargo's yelling, but, you know, once you hear Fargo scream, "Get out of the ring," or somebody at the top of his lungs, you can also see him mouthing, you know, under his breath. He's so loud that you don't notice that he's actually saying, you know, passing along information when he's not being as loud, which I, you know, there were a couple times this week there where it kind of stood out, and I kind of got a kick out of that, but he in his jumpsuit are the, is the referee for the day. And the show began with Bob Caudle and Roddy Piper as your host. Right as the show begins to be introduced, we get Sergeant Slaughter cutting in, very, very upset, talking about a situation which occurred with Ric Flair, which is kind of the shadow of the show, more than the Tag Team Championship Tournament, more than anything else. The situation that ended up breaking down between Sergeant Slaughter and Ric Flair in Charlotte, we'll talk about that, but that's kind of the shadow of the show. Once Slaughter disappears, Caudle and Roddy continue to run down the card, and then immediately the show goes to break. So I'm not sure exactly originally when it aired exactly what the formatting of the show was, but as it appears on the network, we immediately go to a break, and then when we come back, we get the beginning of the match of Terry Taylor and David Patterson. And I will play for you a little bit of audio here because it sets up one of the main themes of the show for this week, which was Austin Idol and Austin Idol's scouting, as we shall say, of different wrestlers as he moves on to his goal of trying to become world champion.
Hang on like Taylor's doing. He's taking the look. There's Austin
another
Idol.
Hard forearm.
There's Austin Idol.
Yep, again, and for the last two or three weeks, Austin Idol. Here's a couple of forearms now from Terry Taylor.
Very
back
strong
to the wrist. Austin Idol has come into the studio for the last couple of weeks on different occasions, Roddy Piper, with that camera and standing right in the ringside. By the way, some of the guys are really complaining about it. Some of the wrestlers are upset about it. Some of them are about to get on his case about this. Well, I don't know what he's doing.
Well, you know, I don't know really what he's doing either, other than scouting, I can tell. But I think he's got something up his sleeve. They want to complain. I think they want to complain because they didn't think of it. I think young Terry Taylor there, he's got a nice hold. But you see, he needs to cinch up on that arm a little bit. RP would just cinch up on there just a little bit more. See? Consequently, a counter. Look at Austin. How intimidating that
Austin
must be.
Reached right back, got a handful of hair. Though. That's the way he slammed into the mat.
Yeah. Well, he's still hanging on.
A series of good hard forearms there by Taylor, and he's still got that wrist.
That kid's tough, isn't he?
So Terry Taylor back out there again this week. Roddy Piper once again on commentary. Bob Caudle once again there to kind of poke at Roddy Piper about Terry Taylor. Doesn't Terry Taylor look good? Isn't Terry Taylor pretty good, Roddy? One thing about Terry Taylor being out there with Bob Caudle around, he has obviously tweaked Roddy Piper with him several times as Piper has critiqued Terry Taylor throughout his matches, and Terry Taylor was in control for most of the bout. Patterson got in some offense late, but that was just really to set up the comeback and the finish from Terry Taylor, and the match went about 5 minutes and 36 seconds here. I'm going to go ahead and play the finish of the match right now, including Roddy Piper's commentary over it.
And he's going to get him high in the air again, another slam.
Very dangerous now. He is very dangerous to do. You'll never catch me. Ooh, he made it, though. Yeah, he's thinking. Grab the leg!
And again, Patterson kicked right out.
It's so frustrating for me to sit here and know what to do and see these young fellows making mistakes.
Leapfrogs right over Patterson.
Oh, that was no mistake.
Driving forearm coming off of the ropes. He's got him into stretch.
This is what impresses me, is he's invented his own particular hold here, a pin from a stretch. Very good. Very good. Look at Austin Idol. Look at Austin Idol. Not missing a thing.
I tell you, Austin Idol got an eyeful right there on that film as he filmed that, Roddy.
So there you hear the end of the match there. Terry Taylor gets the win over David Patterson with his abdominal stretch into a clutch roll-up. And once again, Roddy Piper, not as impressed as maybe some other people are, including Bob Cottle, as RP could do everything Terry Taylor can, and then some. You heard him to screaming about hooking the leg there. One of several times that Piper would critique Taylor throughout the match, calling him out for things that, of course, he does all of the time. But what'd you think of the match? Really wasn't a whole lot to it. It was really just Terry Taylor getting in work there and Roddy Piper getting in a hell of a lot of good work on the mic.
Well, one thing I did notice is that Piper did actually give a little bit of credit to Terry Taylor. At one point on the commentary, he said he's going to be a good one someday, maybe even a Roddy Piper, which is kind of unusual for Piper to go out on a limb and say something like that. But I thought Patterson got in enough offense to at least make it a little bit of a competitive match. Figured Terry Taylor would win, and that's exactly what happened.
Move on to our next match. Didn't know Buffer in the middle. We went right to the next one of the Privates. Kernoodle and Nelson against Mike Davis and Vinny Valentino. I believe this is the first time we have officially seen Kernoodle and Nelson as a team on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, at least inside the ring. And we get a newly aggressive Kernoodle that started off against Valentino. A lot of talk about the film, as it's basically called, the film, with the incident between Sergeant Slaughter and Ric Flair, which took place in, I said Charlotte earlier on, I meant Greensboro, that had taken place on February 21st. This show was taped on February 24th to be aired on the 27th, but they're talking about an incident that took place in Greensboro on the 21st, and that is mentioned a few times here during this match with the Privates. At this point, also, with a tag team match taking place in the ring, we get our first mention of the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament, which was really basically invisible to begin the show and was relatively invisible throughout the day as well, too. Now, we do have Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson that will be wrestling later on the show, and certainly the NWA Tag Team Championship situation is brought up there, but it did kind of play a little bit to the background to some of the other things that were going on, most notably Sergeant Slaughter and Ric Flair, and as I mentioned, Austin Idol's kind of singles run here that was going to be taking place. And this match went about 7 minutes and 23 seconds. Going to play a little bit of audio for you right here.
This is Don Kernoodle. Valentino slams him hard into the turnbuckles, makes the tag. Here comes Mike Davis in. Well, Slaughter may be getting a little worried right now.
Yeah, you can see Slaughter. Nice dropkick! Grab that leg! Oh,
and
he was
able to do it again. He did not have the leg.
Oh, he's going to have to try.
Here is Austin Idol.
Hook him, hook him! This kid's moving.
Austin Idol's got that film running again in that camera.
Now what are they doing? You notice what he's trying to do? He's trying to tag. He's in trouble. He realized
he made
it. He made it. Now look at him hang on the leg. Beautiful.
Beautiful. What? That's double teaming, Piper. He held him right over in the corner for the double team.
You have the count of 5 to get out of the ring. They did that, I'd say, in about 2.5 seconds. That is perfect pro wrestling. Perfect science. That's what you need. That's why I'm so successful. I take care of every attitude. You can hear it. Do you notice Austin Idol again?
I noticed Sergeant Slaughter saying something to him about it. He's drawing at him a little bit. I don't think Slaughter's too happy about it.
Then what you were saying before is correct. The people are starting to get on Austin's case about
this. That's right. They are. And Sergeant Slaughter having some words with him right now.
Roman, there you hear Roddy Piper and Bob Cottle talk about Austin Idol being back out there, as well as what was taking place in the ring, and Slaughter kind of barking at Austin Idol, kind of sending him backpedaling around the ring, making sure he didn't get too close to him or to his men as he was out there filming. And before I play the finish of the match, any thoughts on the match and any thoughts on Idol's interaction with Slaughter? And really, I guess this has been coming with Idol. You know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when Piper was out there kind of squawking about, you know, you're not going to know who my partner is. And Austin Idol seemed to be teamed up with Ivan Koloff, but even in the midst of cutting a promo with his tag team partner, Idol wanted to make sure that everybody knew that he was his own man and he would be doing things his own way, and you never knew what he could be up to. So this isn't exactly out of character for Austin Idol, but they seem to really be pushing that he is a, I don't want to say a man without a country or anything like that, but certainly he is most worried about number one, and number one is Austin Idol.
Yeah, so, something on this match, Mike, I don't know if you noticed it, but I was kind of surprised at how much effort Piper put into putting this team over, the team of Carnoodle and Nelson, considering it was the first time teaming on TV that we have seen. I mean, he went to such great lengths. At one point, he compared them to world leaders. He said, once you've had success and power, you want more and more. I don't know about you, Mike, but I thought that was kind of extreme for a team that the first time you've seen on TV.
You know, it was, but I guess if you're trying to get them over and you're trying to get them over super hard, they definitely were doing it. And, you know, when we get to the results, I think that's going to play itself out a little bit too, you know, making sure that they are established now, established on TV as a force, even though they had just gotten together, even though that they are under the tutelage of Sergeant Slaughter, that they are now violent killing machines under the tutelage of Sergeant Slaughter, not just wrestlers, but high-quality athletes that are a force to be reckoned with. And Piper certainly, you know, mashed them over during the commentary. Now, did that work for the people or not? As we will see down the line, it does. It does a lot better way later on down the line with Slaughter and Carnoodle as a team together. But it certainly accomplished its goal for this week. And as much as Piper was aggressive in getting them over, that's exactly how aggressive the Carnoodle and Nelson were in the ring. We'll play the end of the match here for you, where they were still continuing to pour it on thick.
Darn it. He thought he had a roll going there. He should have tagged the Freshman. A mistake.
He was going to finish Carnoodle off all by himself, and he went one time too often. Carnoodle has got him up.
Unless he can
the running slam.
Kick out. Oh, look at that. Did you see that?
He's going to lift him right up, and what's he going to do with him now?
Watch this. This is Sergeant Slaughter's training. Whoa!
Carnoodle holding him up in the air.
I've never seen nothing like that.
Clotheslining him off of the rope.
Going for the Cobra.
And the Cobra clutch.
Going for the Cobra. The referee's asking him. Check the arm. Three times. He just said forget it.
Yes, sir. With the Cobra clutch. John Carnoodle and Jim Nelson.
Break it. Break it up. Look at Austin Idol. Still filming. Look at the sergeant. These guys may get disqualified for this. I don't know now. No.
Don Carnoodle, Jim Nelson in the ring with their hands raised as the winners.
I love hearing Sonny Fargo in the background just barking. Go on! Just losing his mind there, trying to pull Jim Nelson off of him, you know, having him trapped in the Cobra clutch. And immediately after this match, we get the privates and Sergeant Slaughter going over and talking to Bob Cottle. And Slaughter, again, brings up the tape, the incident that took place between Ricky Steamboat himself, Ric Flair, and his privates on, I believe it would have been a Sunday, February 21st in Greensboro, post-match between Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, a NWA championship match that took place. Before the match, Sergeant Slaughter went to both men and asked to get a title shot, challenged both of them. Both of them, obviously, before their match, not amused with Sergeant Slaughter coming in there and grandstanding a challenge to them before their match. So he went away after the match, after Flair and Steamboat wrestled. Slaughter once again hit the ring with his privates and went after Ricky Steamboat. This whole thing ended with Ric Flair getting stomped on, and a really iconic image that was Ricky Steamboat picking up Ric Flair over his shoulder and carrying Flair's lifeless body back. And it is, this is probably the image that you're going to see for the podcast that you're probably staring at right now when you look at it, but it is certainly a legendary shot of Steamboat picking up his friend Ric Flair and carrying him out of the building. But that is what Sergeant Slaughter is referring to, and that is the tape he is talking over in this interview that he does here with Bob Cottle. After he gets done speaking, there was a cutaway, and then we have the privates speak to Bob Cottle and Roddy Piper about what their mission is and if they are their own men still being teamed up with Sergeant Slaughter.
Fans, U.S. champ Sergeant Slaughter.
Wasn't that devastating what my two new recruits can do? But I'll show you something that's devastating, and I'll tell you about it first. In a recent match between Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair, the world champion, I went into the ring and challenged Ric Flair. I said to Ric Flair, if you win this match, I'd like to challenge you. I've been here 6 months. You've been the champion 6 months, and I haven't had a title shot yet. He said, get away from me. What do you expect from Ric Flair? So I went over to Ricky Steamboat. I said, Ricky Steamboat, if you win this match, if you are the world champion after this match, I want a match with you. And he turned his back on me. So I said it to him again in case he didn't hear me. I said, Ricky Steamboat, I want a match with you if you win this title. And he started saying awful words to me, terrible words to me. And I told you, Ricky Steamboat, I said, nobody talks to me that way. Nobody turns their back on Sergeant Slaughter. And I told you you would pay. And I'm telling you right now, ladies and gentlemen, you watch this film and you'll just see what happens. Here it is right here. Ricky Steamboat's getting the beating of his life for just saying the wrong things to me. See what I'm doing to him? Beating him to the inch of his life.
Yeah, but look, here comes your help.
No, they're not helping me. They're trying to help Ricky Steamboat get out of the ring there. And then here comes Ric Flair. I never expected Ric Flair to come in there. Look at the man throwing my privates around with there trying to help Ricky Steamboat. But you'll see what happens to Ric Flair. Flair, you don't stick your nose in Sergeant Slaughter's business. You had no reason to be in there. I never expected Ric Flair to go in there and help Ricky Steamboat. But you'll see coming up just what happens to Ric Flair or to anybody that messes with Sergeant Slaughter.
Three against the one right now.
It's only one. You can see right here. It's just me beating Ric Flair. It's me, Sergeant Slaughter, as you can see right there. Now you'll see what happens to anybody that messes around with Sergeant Slaughter. Whammo! Bang! Nobody messes with Sergeant Slaughter. You don't mess around with Mother Nature. You don't mess around with Sergeant Slaughter. He's getting the whipping, the beating of the... See, I was pushing my privates away. I was pushing them away. I just wanted Ric Flair to myself. Where's Ricky Steamboat? I don't see him helping Ric Flair now. And you can see what I'm doing to Ric Flair all by myself. Here comes that cheap shot artist. Look at him. Comes in the ring with a chair. If you can't fight me face to face, Ricky Steamboat, why don't you... Look at that, using a chair, hitting my privates, hitting my new recruits. Look at all these other wrestlers coming to the ring here. Now I'm telling you, this is what's gonna happen to any wrestler that messes with Sergeant Slaughter. I'm not fooling around anymore. And you can see just what happened to Ric Flair.
So there you hear Sergeant Slaughter. I won't play the privates interview for you. That was a long Slaughter interview. And then we got an interview that I would love to play for you, which involves Roddy Piper, who began to interview Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen. And unfortunately, the WWE overdub music for Jimmy Valiant's Boy from New York City is so strong and just really so obnoxious that it takes away from trying to play anything. I have this incident that took place on this show on VHS. Unfortunately, I could not find the tape to play it for you. It's really not that big of a deal. Basically, what happens here is Roddy begins to interview Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen when Jimmy Valiant's music hits. As it hits, he comes out, starts to ask Bob Kyle, "You feel good?" Stan Hansen and Ole look at him as if he is insane, because that is exactly how he's acting. Ole Anderson goes to hit him. He blocks it. Lays a punch into Ole, which sends him flying. He ducks Stan Hansen, and Stan Hansen kind of bumbles off and hits the concrete. Ole Anderson and Jimmy Valiant then go rolling into the ring. Now, in the ring, as they go rolling in, are Buck Brannigan and Ivan Koloff. And Brannigan and Koloff are supposed to have a match. Well, Brannigan bails out. Koloff just is standing right there. Valiant hits him. So now you got Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and Ivan Koloff all going after Jimmy Valiant. They're all throwing blows. Before the heels get the advantage too much on Valiant, outrun. And by the way, as this is going on too, Roddy Piper is nowhere to be found. And then once the good guys start to pour out from the locker room, Piper just disappears. So Jimmy Valiant goes to war with Ivan Koloff, Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and has got Roddy Piper standing right there, and not only lives to and survives it to talk about it, but he talks about it immediately with Bob Caudle afterwards, him and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. He said mercy and then just left. And then that's it. And then the next match takes place, but a certainly interesting interlude. And it's not going to be the last we see of Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen. We see them a little bit later on down the line. And we get the interview with them that we didn't get right there that Jimmy Valiant interrupted. But certainly a interesting interlude into the program there between Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen and Jimmy Valiant. Any thoughts on that little situation between Valiant, Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and Ivan Koloff?
Yeah, that whole thing was very bizarre, especially, like you said, they couldn't play the original music. I thought there was something wrong with my copy. All of a sudden, there's this jazzy, peppy sound going on. I was like, what the heck's going on? And then Jimmy Valiant comes out. And I thought that was a really, really funny moment in there. As Hansen goes to throw a punch, he completely missed Valiant and ended up falling on the floor. And you can tell it was not intentional. And just you people have got to go check that out. It was quite comical. And then there's one point where Piper says, I would love to get in there and help, but my ribs are sore. And that just Piper just cracks me up on commentary. But yeah, that whole scenario just seemed like it came out of left field. Very bizarre, very chaotic. And like you said, Brannigan was in the ring, and then all of a sudden it's just Ivan. And it was a weird segment.
And the crazy part is it still plays in because it's Ivan Koloff was the one that's in the ring, even though it's now setting up Valiant. And Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen, and obviously Valiant having a partner to take them on in that scenario, it still plays into the fact that Jimmy Valiant is going after Ivan Koloff's TV title and that they've been feuding around the horn. So that kind of played in well together. And the fact that obviously Ole Anderson and Ivan Koloff have a history together. So it's all these things that all blended really, really well before Ray Stevens and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. came out to help out Jimmy Valiant. And I'll go ahead and play some of what took place there, including what you mentioned about Roddy Piper. You know, damnedest thing. You know, I was going to get in there, but see, I got this floating rib, and, well, I'll let Roddy Piper explain.
I get in there, but my rib's sore. Look out. Italian's gone nuts. Italian's cool off. Valiant's gone completely nuts!
And Jimmy Valiant in that ring.
Koloff ain't gonna take that from Valiant! Look at him!
Stan Hansen, Ole Anderson, Ivan Koloff, he's taking on everybody. Roddy Piper's about to go crazy. Here comes Ray Stevens.
Not them!
Ray Stevens is in the ring. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. is in the ring. Roddy Piper took off, and I don't know where Piper's going. Well, what started out as a very calm interview really came apart when the boy from New York City, Jimmy Valiant, came charging in right after Stan Hansen, Ole Anderson.
There you hear a little of the breakdown there of everything going all crazy. And after the building kind of empties out there, we go to a quick break. And when we come back, we've got Mike George standing there in the ring facing off against Big Mike Miller. And at this point, David Crockett has now joined Bob Caudle on commentary as Roddy Piper just disappeared in the middle of all that. As Bob had mentioned, just don't know why Roddy bolted, but did. Mike George, I believe he had debuted about 2 weeks ago at this point now, threatening Sergeant Slaughter, telling him, you know why I'm here. Looking at the results from around the circuit, I'm still not sure that Sergeant Slaughter has got any clue that Mike George is there, but
I was going to say, I'm glad somebody knew why Mike George was there.
it's that McGurk, and that's the one thing I didn't do before this show with everything kind of going on, and I'll make sure that I have him ready for next week, too. I usually have those Leroy McGurk results at my side there, and obviously with what happened with Leroy McGurk and Mike George, where Mike George was one of, I believe, 7 or 8 wrestlers that walked out of a show before a show that Leroy McGurk was supposed to put on the fall before the fall of 1981, Bill Watts coming in to take over part of the territory, and George went to go work with him. So he wasn't working for McGurk at the time and was not working for George Scott, who was running that territory for McGurk at the time and using a lot of other Mid-Atlantic guys. And sending some guys over like Eddie Mansfield and Porkchop Cash to go and work in Mid-Atlantic. That wasn't the case with George. George was already working for Mid-South, but certainly there may have been some familiarity there between George and some people that were in Mid-Atlantic's office. And if you think about it, if you're Ole Anderson, if you're Gene Anderson, if you're that type of wrestler, you probably really like Mike George. I mean, Mike George was not a bad wrestler by any means at all. He lacked a lot of color, but as far as being a bruising type of guy, you know, I don't know, Roman. I would put him, of that type of wrestler, you know, I would certainly put him above, say, an Iron Mike Sharp, I think, on my list of guys that I would like to see wrestle, but certainly several steps down from other people that I think would fit in that brawler type of meat and potatoes type of category. Like, I'll take him every day of the week plus Sunday twice over a guy like Bob Sweetan, but I certainly wouldn't ever take him over a Stan Hansen, a Steve Williams, or somebody like that.
You didn't like Canada's greatest athlete, Iron Mike Sharp?
Well, you know, it's he did have that forearm, I guess. But, you know, I tell you, one of the funny things, too, talk about Mike George, and people can go back and hear this, you know, on the other Arcadian Vanguard Network show, the Mid-South Wrestling Podcast with Mike Mills and Brian Last. They've talked about Iron Mike Sharp being there and wrestling for Mid-South as a fan favorite. And it is so ridiculous when you go back. And to me, at least, when you watch Iron Mike Sharp as a fan favorite, it just doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't work at all.
And if memory serves correct, on one of the DVDs I have, he was like the Louisiana champion, too,
sure
or
was.
Something. It was just seeing Sharp get a little bit of a push and being cheered. It was definitely something different.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And I mean, look, and every you know, it depends, I guess, who you come up with, too. You know, I'm sure for people like Ole Anderson and Ivan Koloff, you know, later on in his career getting cheered, it's like I could accept that. But, you know, not seeing him all the time, every time I saw an Iron Mike Sharp or a Bruiser Bob Sweetan or somebody like that try to play good guy, Buck Robley, there's another one. It's like, how is this guy a good guy right now? It's just, that just was not the type of dude that I would ever cheer for. Killer Tim Brooks, I don't know if he was ever a fan favorite anywhere either, but like I could never bring myself to cheer for him, I don't think.
Well, when you have the power of the pen like Buck Robley, I guess you can put yourself in as a fan favorite. You know, it makes it a little easier.
It does, and you know, boy, we've talked more about things around this match with Mike George than the match actually went. It went about 3 minutes and 31 seconds. Is the time I had for it. George finishes off Mike Miller with a shoulder breaker, and not much to really get into here, but I will play the finish for everybody.
Miller now taking his time. Headlock again. Cross into the ropes, off they come. Nice tackle by Mike George.
Well, it looked like Miller was going to try to pick him up for the slam.
George, oh, he's got it. Shoulder breaker. Down for the pin.
Hooks
got it.
One, two, three. With a shoulder breaker after some slams, and then that shoulder breaker, Mike George came on to pin Mike Miller.
After Mike George finished up with Mike Miller, we threw it back to Bob Cottle, who interviewed Ray Stevens, Jake Roberts, and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. We only get a trifecta this time. We don't get the superfecta that we've been getting over the last couple of weeks, but you know what? Any interview that's anchored by Ray Stevens can't be all bad, so I'll play that trio of interviews for you right now.
Fans, Ray Stevens right here. Ray, I tell you, that was a wild bit of action we had there with Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson.
Well, I tell you what, that's Ole Anderson's general M.O., him and his gang, him and Gene Anderson. Now it's him and Stan Hansen agitating people, bothering people, getting them upset. You got to give the man credit. He's not afraid of anything because he don't care who it is. He'll come out and agitate him or do something to him. Like in the past, he hurt my partner, Pat Patterson. They tried to break his leg. Well, tonight, brother, he got on the boogeyman, Jimmy Valiant, and he didn't back up. In fact, he stung him pretty good right here. In fact, he embarrassed him. Now, I don't know what Ole Anderson's going to think about that. He embarrassed the whole gang of them right there. So they better be looking out. Another thing to slaughter now has got the two young men. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you what, if they want to get down and dirty, that's great. But when they get ganging up on people like they did Ric Flair and like they did Ricky Steamboat, I think that's pretty low. If he wants to teach them how to be mean men and wrestle and be winners, that's a horse of a different color. What do you think about
all right,
it, Jake?
Jake, let's see you.
Jake Roberts.
We were both in Greensboro, and we seen the thing that happened, and it was a little bit too much for me to stomach, I'll tell you. Because, you know, it's a little bit different. Like Ray said, if you want to go one-on-one and punch it out with somebody, go ahead and do it. But when you start ganging up 3-on-1, 3-on-2, getting those odds in your favor, they just weren't walking in there with their hands. Right. They had belts on. He wound up hitting Flair with a belt.
A number of times.
And that's a little bit too much. And Canoodle, I've made a lot of, I spent a lot of time with Don Canoodle. I don't know what's happened to the kid. I don't know if he's just decided to heck with it. I'm going to go with Slaughter because he's a winner. Well, Don, you don't need to do it. You didn't need to before, and you darn sure don't need it now.
All right, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. right here, Blackjack.
Yeah, but I tell you, I want to elaborate a little more. All these people are finding out about Slaughter and his henchmen. They're finding out very hard. A Steamboat and Flair have been close to me for a long time, but they're all finding out hard about Slaughter. And Slaughter, if it's me, a Flair, or Steamboat, you're going to get yours, and your boys
somebody's
are too. That's right.
There you hear those interviews there. Then it's on to our next match, Ron Ritchie against Bill White. Ron Ritchie, a Vern Gagne guy from Western Canada, came into Jim Crockett Promotions in 1980. Had not really been out of Western Canada, I don't believe, and out of the AWA territory until he went on the excursion to Jim Crockett Promotions. And, you know, he'd have a one of those guys with a fair to middling career, would be a good way to put it, for Ritchie throughout. Would obviously, when he get away from a territory like Crockett, would kind of shine a little bit more, became a little bit of a bigger fish in a smaller pond. But in Jim Crockett Promotions, especially at this point in career just starting out, he was still pretty nondescript there. At that point, too, in this match, David Crockett is still out there with Bob on commentary. Roddy Piper is still MIA. And, you know, many times as they would do with a match like this between Ron Ritchie and Bill White, which was basically to get Ritchie some experience out there, you know, this match would be used as basically a backdrop to talk about some other things that were taking place inside the territory and some other things, of course, taking place on the show. And they talked about Jimmy Valiant going out there and getting into the fight with Ole and Hansen and Ivan Koloff, and certainly gave the, you know, Dave and Bob a chance to talk about Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and how competitive the area was. You know, at this point, they finally mentioned the tag tournament as well as Roman, a very notable
the
thing.
Good news!
Yes, you're the most favorite tournament name of all time, all our life, our most favorite poll questionnaire, the always unwieldy, who contributed the most to Jim Crockett Promotions in 1981. We find out it's almost over. In fact, it is technically over. All of the votes are in. And David said that they will be announcing a winner in the next few weeks. I mean, did that not brighten your heart about? Did this make that a five-star match?
That was the highlight of the Ron Ritchie, Bill White match. Hearing that news, now that it's well into February, we can finally stop talking about the previous year's contest.
It is
great news.
It took how many weeks for them to actually settle on the name too? Who contributed the most to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions in 1981? Oh, man, is this thing, what a mess that thing was. But Ron Ritchie ended up winning the match with a roll-up in 4 minutes and 57 seconds there. And as we mentioned, you know, the tag team tournament gets mentioned. Who contributed the most in 1981 gets mentioned. They did note the last time we left talking about this, Roddy Piper had taken the lead from Ricky Steamboat. And they never mentioned Steamboat's name, but they certainly mentioned Piper's as being the last one who was in the lead there. So that was interesting. At the end of the match, as you're going to hear in our clip, David Crockett, much like Johnny Carson would do when a comedian would go out there and kill on a set, you really know you killed it if Johnny Carson would stand there and wave you over. And I'm not sure if Ron Ritchie really killed it in this five-minute match that he had with Bill White, but he got waved over, but then we'd understand why.
Bill White now takes his time, picks him up. Ritchie drops back. Scoop. That's it.
He got him pinned.
Here
yes,
you go.
Sir. From behind.
I'm going to get Ron Ritchie over here.
Okay,
him
get him over here, David. Because I tell you, one surprise individual with that move was Bill White. And David now is calling Ron Ritchie over. Let's see if David can get a word right here with Ron Ritchie. David.
Ron, welcome back to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. I know you winded, but what about everything that's taking place right now in the area? You have Sergeant Slaughter and what he's done to Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair. You have Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen about Jimmy Van. It just goes on and on.
Well, before Mr. Crockett, before I say anything about where I've been, what I've been doing, I'd just like to get something off my mind. I was out here viewing a videotape of what happened It took place about a week ago, a match between Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. And I seen Steamboat was down, and Sergeant Slaughter, no business worry, stepping into the ring, coming to the ring. Steamboat was down with his back to the ground, and Slaughter came in. This upset me. This is not professional wrestling.
Just a minute, just a minute. I don't know who you are or what you're doing out here talking about me, but I don't want any more of it. You got that? You got that?
Listen,
you don't
Slaughter.
Talk to me like that. Nobody talks to me like
and
that.
And I don't have to take it, Slaughter, and I won't.
Come back here a minute. I gotta slap you right across the face. Nobody talks about me like that, Crockett.
Hey, that's enough.
Nobody talks
that's
to me like that.
That.
About
talk
me
to
like that.
Let's go to commercial break right
Wait
now.
Wait a minute.
So there you hear Ron Ritchie walk away from Sergeant Slaughter. They did go to a commercial break right there with Sergeant Slaughter being very upset that Ritchie would walk away from him as Slaughter tried to take over and use his bully pulpit and throw his weight around on the set as he was wanting to do. When they got back from break, David Crockett thanked Ritchie on his restraint and said since he was winded, he was smart to walk away from Slaughter. That's when Don Gilbert and Kelly Kanisky came in for a short promo that seemed to certainly sound that that's where local promos probably would have fit in there from how it sounded. Kelly Kanisky being the son of former World Heavyweight Champion Gene Kanisky, him getting interview time, yes. When it comes to Don Gilbert, this is the third week in a row we've had to hear from the charismatic wonder man that is Don Gilbert, the physical wonder. And Don, with once again, not a whole lot to say, so I won't go ahead and play that promo. We just skip right over that and go right to the main event of the evening, which was Don Gilbert and Kelly Kanisky getting into the ring to face off against Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson, with Gene Anderson outside the ring. At this point, it's very interesting as Austin Idol strolled out and joined the crew on commentary without his camera and just talked a little bit about his scouting techniques and the phases of attack that he has as he moves forward to the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. At least that's what he'd like to do. And Roman, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a lot from Austin Idol, different gear, different attitudes, kind of depending on which way the wind blows, is how much ego he'd be packing at the time. He's teamed with Ivan Koloff, but he's also sent veiled threats to other guys. And, you know, as we hear him on commentary here, he's going to do the same thing with Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen again. But Austin is your guy, and this in some ways was his show. Before I go ahead and play this interview with him and him a little bit on the mic here with Slaughter and Ole Anderson, how you feeling about your boy on today's broadcast? Because he certainly got a lot of FaceTime.
Yeah, he definitely got FaceTime, but I was glad that finally somebody got a little angry. You know, when Slaughter and Idol had words earlier on, because if you're going to keep running them out there with the video camera, you got to do something with it. You just can't have them standing there pretending to film and not have it lead to something. So I was glad that they finally kind of got the wheels in motion a little bit and had Slaughter and Idol exchange words. You know, I thought that was a good idea.
You know, and it's one of the things we talk about every week, you know, seemingly when, especially with the Superfecta interviews with Roddy Piper out there, where your bad guys got to have tension with each other. They're bad guys. You know, not everybody's going to work together hand in hand just because you have a common opponent. You're bad guys. Ole Anderson's a bad guy. Roddy Piper's a bad guy in his own way. Stan Hansen's a bad guy. Ivan Koloff. Everybody's got a motive at work. And I love that. I love the fact that, you know, it is only a combination. They're only the Legion of Doom when it's really time for them to pull together and try to strike out against one person. But it's still a organization of nefarious dudes. And on commentary, Austin Idol, like I said, you know, drops in some shots against Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson as well because, well, he's Austin Idol.
Watch him, fans, as he gets in the ring right here. Again, Austin Idol is here, and Austin doesn't have his camera with him. And let me ask Austin, where's the camera?
Well, it's been made perfectly clear to me that there's been a lot of people complaining about me taking some footage of him. Is that true?
That's right.
Let me say this, okay, Bob? This is the third week I've been out here doing this, and I don't care who complains about what. You know, and I think what it really is, I think that a lot of the wrestlers here are jealous, and that includes Roddy Piper, Sergeant Slaughter, Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and the whole Motley crew. And I'll tell you why they're jealous. Because they weren't creative enough. Because they didn't have the imagination. Because they weren't innovative enough. Because they didn't come up with the idea like the Idol did to come out and film the competitors. Take the film home. Show it in their library. Show it in their filming room and be able to study the moves just like the baseball players, just like the hockey players, just like the football players, just like all the other professional sports. They can holler. They can scream. They can whine. They can moan. They can groan. They can say anything they want to. I'm perfectly within my rights by taking film of all the wrestlers that I want to. And I don't care who says what, when they say it, or what they say. I'm going to do what I want to do because I am Austin Idol, the universal heartthrob, the women's pet, and the men's regret. Let them say what they want to say, but you are listening right now to the next World's Heavyweight Champion, bar none. Look at this Ole Anderson. Sure, he's got the moves. Look at the size. Look at the power. Look at the fury. Almost as strong as the Idol, almost as quick as the Idol, not quite as intelligent as the Idol. He's got Stan Hansen, the big Texan from Border, Texas. Sure, he's bad. Sure, he's got a reputation. Sure, he's hurt a lot of people. Sure, he is the one who put Bruno Sammartino in the hospital, who made history, wrestling history, when he hospitalized Bruno Sammartino. Take them both. Sure, they're a devastating team. But, darling, right now you are listening to truly the greatest all-around athlete of all time, and believe you me, this is only phase one. There are three phases left, and when it's all said and done, you'll be listening and seeing the new World's Heavyweight Champion right here. Look at that right there.
Now, I had to fade it out right there because Austin Idol does not shut up for the rest of the match. He is cutting. He's just, as you heard there, as he goes on, darling, and he's talking, and it doesn't matter if it's Roddy Piper. It goes on and on and on, and Austin Idol could make anything about him, and he could do it so incredibly well, and he did that same thing during the next 3 minutes and 40 seconds before he kind of goes and exits stage left as Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen got out of the ring to cut his promo. But man, Idol even going after Roddy Piper, who gave him credit at the beginning of the show for being smart enough to be good to go out there, and that's why these people are upset with him. Idol even takes the shot at Roddy Piper at the beginning, too, even calling him out and calling him jealous of what the Universal Heartthrob is doing. Idol all over the place right there.
I did not understand that at all. I mean, you have Hansen and Ole going in the tag tournament, and here they are in a tag match, and have Idol come out and do commentary and make it all about himself and then say that he's going to be the next world champ. I don't know. To me, the Idol commentary, that should have been a separate interview, a separate promo. To me, him going on and on like that took away the fact that Hansen and Ole were in a tag match. I did not understand that whole segment there. That didn't make any sense to me, why they let Idol just go and go and go and take away from the tag match.
Yeah, and because of the fact too that around the loop, as we'll hear in the results, Idol, there are times where he's teaming with Piper, not as part of the tournament, but he's teaming with Piper. Not only that, Ric Flair is tied up right now with, we saw that he had the incident a couple weeks ago with Youngblood and Steamboat, and they kind of teased Flair going dirty there. Obviously, we've pulled back on that. Later on in 1982, it does happen, but we've pulled back on that now because Sergeant Slaughter has gotten involved with Flair. So you have that going on. So Flair's distracted. So yes, Idol, of course, wants a title shot with Flair, but there's no direct challenge there. Idol and Flair, technically, in wrestling terms, as far as the Jim Crockett Promotions universe, you know, Flair doesn't even have Idol on his radar right now. At no point during the tournaments, I don't believe, and we'll check throughout the results, is Idol tied up with Hansen and Ole Anderson. At no point are they tied up in Atlanta together, because all of them are heels in Atlanta when they're there. So there was really no fit for exactly how Idol was doing his commentary. Now, him being out there and talking about his stuff, yeah, but like you said, him kind of droning on and, you know, basically being a non sequitur to what was really taking place in the environment of what was going on just didn't make any sense. You know, him announcing that he's going after the championship, he did that. He's talked about his phases, but he really hasn't even gotten into that. It's just been a lot of wordplay and a lot of him carrying around the camera.
Segment just did not make sense to me, and not sure why they did it. You know, I don't know what else I can say about it. I'm really not sure why they ran with that like that.
After that, though, Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen then joined Bob Caudle at the commentary table. Unlike last week, Gene Anderson doesn't get a chance to speak and call Stan Hansen Private Jim Hansen Nelson Swede Kernoodle, whatever it is that Gene would say. But you know what? If Gene said it to me, I would just nod my head and agree. And even Stan, hey, what can you do? If Gene Anderson calls you a name, that's just the name you're going to be, whether you like it or not. That's, you're Mr. Pink. That's how that works now. Can I be another caller? No, your name's Mr. Pink, and that's the way it's going to be. Unfortunately, for our own amusement, Gene didn't get a chance to speak. And unfortunately for everybody else, including Bob Cottle, the name Jimmy Valiant is going to evoke some rage and some anger out of an already salty Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen.
Fans, here they are, Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen,
Gene
Anderson.
I was looking for a big partner and a good partner. With Gene back here, watching from the background, giving us help, giving us wrestling tips, and a guy like Hansen in the ring, is there any doubt in your mind that he's the most devastating machine you've ever seen? Is there any doubt in your mind that we're going to be the greatest tag team combination that wrestling has ever seen?
I got to ask you about Valiant. I got to ask you about Jimmy Valiant.
Never talk about Valiant! We're talking about Valiant.
Nobody wants to hear about Valiant.
Wait a second.
I'll just make you write one little statement right here. Valiant, I'm going to put you in the same box with all those other people. The Dusty Rhodes, the Briscoes, the Steamboats, the Youngbloods, the Roberts, the Stevens. They go on and on and on. The Cash, the Browns. Valiant, you made a big showing tonight. You really look good. I'm really happy for you. It'll be the last time you do anything.
You know, a few times, you know, people get in the ring, we underestimate somebody. But, you know, it's Valiant's fault. He's sticking his nose into our time. He's got a lot of coming out here thinking that he's going to get around and get away with stuff like this. Well, you might have looked good up there bouncing around the ring like some weird old wired-up guy. But let me tell you something, brother. You've never been in it, brother, with the Lariat. The Lariat and the Hook. It's the new nastiest tag team of all times. I am from Texas. These Mulligans, these Stevens, these Jake Roberts, all these guys, they claim to be from Texas. But I was born and raised there, Jack. They have to run me north out of the Red River to get me out of the state of Texas, and the only one to do it is Ole Anderson.
I tell you what, they're talking about the Japs coming in. Gene, just remind me, the Giant Bob is coming to town. Oneida and a bunch of people, I don't even know who they are. Mexican champions coming to town. Well, I tell
Billy
you,
Robinson,
this is the old Billy Robinson. We got all kinds of people that'll be here very shortly. Well, they're going to come in when they meet us, that's or true. When they meet Idol, or anybody like Koloff or Piper, that's going to be the end of them.
And that ended up being basically the end of the show right there, as Bob Cottle ended up wishing us adieu. I don't like how they do it on the network, so we're going to do that for you a little bit later on here. But we still got some things to get into, including really my two things from that interview. Number one, Stan Hansen said balls, and they edited it out. And number two, the Lariat and the Hook. Damn. I think I'm going to offer that up right now to Filthy Tom Lawler in MLW and make sure that he trademarks that if it's possible. I don't know if the Hook and the Lariat and the Hook can be trademarked for wrestling purposes, but what a tag team name, and what a perfect name too for Hansen and Ole Anderson. If that's what their team name would have been in lore, like Midnight Express or Rock and Roll Express or Road Warriors or whatever, I would have been completely fine with that. That is a badass name.
Yes, it is. And something on that interview, Mike, that just, it's fresh in my mind because I saw it earlier today, is what a difference in the announcing styles of a Bob Cottle and a David Crockett. In this, Cottle casually stirs the pot when he mentions Jimmy Valiant and gets them all riled up. Earlier today, I watched the segment where Nikita Koloff clotheslined David Crockett on Worldwide Wrestling from 1985. And even if you hated Nikita Koloff back then, you were so happy that he clotheslined Crockett because he had it coming. He was so obnoxious. And to hear Cottle, even when Cottle stirs the pot, you can't get mad at him. He's such a likable character. And just that just kind of popped in my head hearing that Cottle thing compared to David Crockett when Nikita clotheslined him. And even people that hated Nikita were happy Nikita clotheslined Crockett back in the day. Put it this way, Mike, when I meet Nikita next month at a fan fest, I'll probably give him a high five and mention that moment when he clotheslined Crockett, because you guys got to watch that segment. It was from Worldwide, and just he had it coming. He was just so snarky, and I mean, I know he was doing his job,
he
but
was
just
in a white jacket,
I think
too, wasn't he?
anybody would have attacked David Crockett after the way he was acting.
David Crockett, the love-hate relationship with David Crockett, you know, the infectious enthusiasm and the god-awful interviews sometimes and some of the ridiculous things he would say. And before we get into the results from around the circuit, I will actually throw in a little bit of a bonus here for you from Maple Leaf Wrestling, because As we exit out of here, coming up is a match in Toronto, which we'll talk about the results of that show. I think it was two shows ago. We talked a little bit about and played a clip of the Cadillac Cup in a promo from Roddy Piper and Sergeant Slaughter that was supposed to be coming to Toronto, taking place up there. Unfortunately, that show ended up getting snowed out. The TV tapings the next day in Gulf, Ontario, were still able to take place. And that weekend, they had to reschedule the entire Cadillac tournament. They had another show scheduled in Toronto for February. So they ended up having to push the Cadillac Tournament Cup up until March. And we'll end up talking about that, I believe it is, next week. But during the tapings on the 1st for this show that was coming up in Toronto during the latter half of February, because Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Big John Studd couldn't make it and wouldn't be there, Roddy Piper was the one that got to hype up the return match between the two.
And finally, a match that everyone has been demanding, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. will go up against Big John Studd. And we have a gentleman with us here today who has a few comments that he would like to make about this match between Mulligan and Big John Studd. Roddy Piper.
Well, it's such a pleasure to be here in the land of thieves. Big Bad John sits there and wins his Canadian title. I've heard it all over the country. I've heard it all over America, the land of the free. Come here to Canada and takes the title away. Steals it away because officials, whether they're biased or whether they just have a hard time trying to have a Canadian that's upstanding, I'm really not sure which it is. To tell you the truth, I really don't care, because Big John Studd ain't holding back for nothing. And what do they got? They got the great offender, right? Gonna run into the nearest phone booth, put on his Superman costume, throw a hog over his shoulder, and out comes Big Black Brat Jack Mulligan. 7 foot tall, 320 pounds. In other words, what you got there? 10 more pounds, and this guy needs license plates. I mean, a big guy, and you got two big guys like this gonna fight together. You see, you like to come and see that because it's something that you can't do, being the little sniveling thieves that you are. So, Mr. Big Bad Black Jack Mulligan, remember something. They use studs for tying down railway tracks, for making babies. Studs, no dud, brother.
All right, Roman, keep that in mind. For making babies, stud is no dud, brother.
Okay.
Did you ever see the ad? These were, of all the people, remember the Four Horsemen vitamins? Do you remember that Big John Studd had his own line of vitamins?
No, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, he had a line of vitamins, as well as like you got the 8x10 glossy of him if you ordered the vitamins, and I think he had his own type of like workout kit and poster that like Hulk Hogan had and some other people too. But yeah, Big John Studd, believe it or not, had his own line of vitamins, and fortunately he's no longer with us, died way too early, unfortunately. Big John Studd did, but you know, we're still gonna have a lot. We still haven't seen much of John Studd, really. It's been the damnedest thing, because he has made a lot of appearances in Mid-Atlantic at this time, just not on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling TV. He's been on Worldwide. He has certainly been over the mountains over there in Knoxville, working for Les Thatcher and Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Ric Flair and Kevin Sullivan and whoever else was in charge over there, feuding with Blackjack and with Blackjack Jr. He's certainly been over there, as well as up in Canada as the Canadian heavyweight champion. I believe by this point he had lost it to Angelo Mosca. So the match that we had between Sr. and Studd up there in Toronto was a non-title match between the two. But yeah, I mean, just a cavalcade of people that we have not even talked about yet that are floating around the area. I mean, we barely talked about Ric Flair, you know, and he hasn't been missed. And it's just been an amazing array of talent. And, you know, that show that took place, that I was talking about here, took place on February 21st. And Blackjack ended up beating Big John Studd in 13 minutes and 45 seconds by disqualification. Also on that show, Ivan Koloff defeated Jimmy Valiant by DQ, and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated Austin Idol. A relatively deep card, and basically a pure Jim Crockett Promotions card as well, too. Usually we got a some sort of WWE main event, whether it be a world title match, intercontinental title match, or just a big name coming in from the WWF. We didn't have that there in Toronto on the 21st. It was basically a JCP show with the Ninja and Gene Anderson defeating Jay Youngblood and Johnny Weaver, Tony Parisi defeating John White and John Bonello, defeating Lewis Lawrence. So that was the show there. Results from around the area on the 25th in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. And again, when we give these results, we stop at the taping date. So we pick back up again on the Thursday after they taped the television shows. And they had two shows that night, one in South Carolina, one in the eastern part of the state, almost all the way the eastern part of the state, Elizabeth City, North Carolina, Northeastern High School. Ricky Steamboat against Roddy Piper was the semi-main event. The main event was a 12-man battle royal. No results from that show. No results from Sumter, South Carolina either, where Ivan Koloff faced off against Jimmy Valiant in a lumberjack match that night. On February 26th in Richmond, Virginia, we had another one of the tag team championship tournaments. Roddy Piper defeated Ricky Steamboat, and Jerry Briscoe defeated Private Nelson in non-tournament matches. For this tournament, we only had six teams, and we got a return of the Andersons for a night. Ray Stevens and Leroy Brown defeated Austin Idol and John Studd by reverse decision, and Sergeant Slaughter and Private Nelson defeated Kelly Kaniski and Ron Ritchie in the first round. And in the first round, because there were only six teams, the Briscoes and the Andersons both received byes. As we move to the semifinals, Slaughter and Nelson defeated Stevens and Leroy Brown by DQ, and the Briscoes defeated the Andersons. And in the finals, Sergeant Slaughter and Private Nelson defeated Jack and Jerry Briscoe to win the tournament. Also that night in Charleston, South Carolina at County Hall, Ivan Koloff defeated Jimmy Valiant, and Johnny Weaver defeated Lloyd Alfred Hayes in a Texas Death Steel Cage match, as Lloyd Alfred Hayes was still on the way out of the area. The next day in Knoxville, Tennessee at WBIR Studios, Blackjack Mulligan Jr.'s promotion ran their TV tapings. Meanwhile, that night in Fredericksburg at Stafford County High School, that show was canceled due to bad weather. That was supposed to have Sergeant Slaughter against Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Ivan Koloff against Jimmy Valiant on it. On the 28th in Asheville, Ricky Steamboat defeated John Studd, who was a substitute for Ric Flair, and Roddy Piper and Austin Idol defeated Ray Stevens and Bob Armstrong. Jake Roberts defeated John Studd by DQ. I believe the point of the Studd substitution against Ricky Steamboat was Ric Flair still continuing to play off the injury and that he had suffered at the hands of the Marines. Also on the 28th, down in Atlanta, Georgia, where Ric Flair really was that night, we got another one of our tag team championship tournaments, and this is the one I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Talked to Roman about the non-tournament matches. World champion Ric Flair went to a double DQ with Harley Race. The Great Kabuki defeated Dusty Rhodes in a Dragon Shy match, which if you ever go and have some time that you want to fall into a YouTube hole, everybody, go look up the promos for Dusty Rhodes and Gary Hart going back and forth with each other at this time in Georgia Championship Wrestling. Great Kabuki, are you an errand boy? That's where that one came from. As Dusty Rhodes is all painted up, and I have a shot from when Dusty Rhodes is all painted up when he's doing that promo that he looks exactly like Dustin Rhodes as Gold Dust. Also, in singles matches on the show, Giant Baba defeated Terry Gordy and Jimmy Garvin defeated Buzz Sawyer. When it came to the tournament itself, this thing was loaded down. Dory and Terry Funk defeated Buddy Rose and Rip Oliver coming in from Oregon. The Briscoes defeated Ron Bass and Kevin Sullivan by DQ. Ron Fuller and Big Bad Leroy Brown defeated the Masked Superstar and the Super Destroyer, Scott Hogg Irwin. And Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen defeated Brad Armstrong and Tommy Rogers to wrap up the first round. In the second round, Jack Briscoe and Jerry Briscoe defeated Dory Funk Jr. and Terry Funk. Jumbo Tsuruta and Genichiro Tenryu defeated Ron Fuller and Leroy Brown. And Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen received a bye. In the semifinals, Ole and Stan defeated Jumbo and Tenryu. The Briscoes got a bye for that round. And in the finals, Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen defeated the Briscoes to win the tournament. And, you know, Roman, I'll drag you back in here, and this isn't really fair to do for you since, you know, didn't have any idea it was coming. But do you recall watching these on tape? Do you remember any of these matches? Because from what I remember, I know the Baba Gordy match, I don't think was much, you know, and I can't really, I'm going to have to go back and actually watch this because it doesn't stick in my mind a whole lot, but Does any of this stick out to you?
I am 99% sure I have the Hanson Ole Shiruta Tenru and the Hanson Ole Briscoes match from Japanese television. Some of the other stuff, not so much, but I'm pretty sure I have those two matches from Japanese TV.
On March 1st, the next night, we go to Fayetteville, North Carolina at the Cumberland County Memorial Arena, and we get another tag team tournament. What's interesting about this? Who wins the tournament? Private Nelson and Private Noodle, which means Private Jim Nelson, in the span of only a couple of days, has won two of the NWA World Tag Team Championship qualifiers, Carnoodle and Nelson. There is a really good story about this, and I don't want to take away from it because I want everybody to read it, but there is an interview up at the Mid-Atlantic Gateway with Private Carnoodle where he talks about basically going home and him and Nelson not having any idea that they were scheduled to win the tournament, and that they go in there that night, and a big surprise to them that they go ahead and win the tournament. That also featured Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson and the Briscoes and Pork Chop Cash and Jay Youngblood and some other teams as well, too. And a big victory for Nelson, and maybe his most winningest ways in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, certainly to that point. If you want to include the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship he would win later on, I guess that would be an accomplishment too. But, you know, him getting the two Dukes here in these two title tournaments was definitely a big deal at the time. Also on March 1st in Greenville, South Carolina, Sergeant Slaughter defeated Ricky Steamboat, and Roddy Piper defeated Bob Armstrong coming up from Georgia. On the 2nd in Randleman, North Carolina, Ricky Steamboat and Ray Stevens defeated Roddy Piper in the Ninja at the high school there in a relatively small show. While over in Columbia, South Carolina, Piper defeated Bob Armstrong and John Studd defeated Ray Stevens by DQ. And that takes us back to March 3rd at Charlotte, North Carolina, WPCQ Studios, where we would get another set of tapings of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and Worldwide Wrestling. And while I won't reveal the results, I will let you know what we'll be seeing via the WWE Network when it comes to the show next week. Here's their write-up on it for March 6, 1982. On this edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Private Don Carnoodle and Private Jim Nelson take to the ring to battle Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony in a tag team match main event. Plus, Austin Idol competes in singles action, and Jimmy Valiant goes one-on-one with Steve Seibert and much, much more. As I look at the preview of the show, Bob Cottle and Roddy Piper are going to be our hosts. Roddy Piper out there in a white shirt and a bright red, kind of a, not a bright red, but an Alabama crimson red jacket. It looks like he's got on there, and he is as bright red as the jacket is. So if that's as good of a preview as any as we can get for next week, is we're going to get an amped up Roddy Piper, and an amped up Roddy Piper when it comes to these shows is certainly not a bad thing. But I want to thank everybody for letting us get back on the horse slowly here. And Roman, as we've come to the end of another Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episode, Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, is there any sort of bow you want to tie on this thing?
Yeah, there was something I wanted to mention. The Slaughter, Carnoodle, Nelson, Flair, Steamboat segment where Slaughter and his men jumped Steamboat and Flair came to the rescue. And then later on, they whip Flair and Steamboat comes to the rescue and carries Flair back to the locker room. For somebody that saw a billion and one Flair versus Steamboat matches, just the visual of them defending each other is something that stood out with me. But one thing on this episode that I have a complaint with, that just looking back, not only now, but then, they show us a Mike George versus Mike Miller match. They show us a Ron Ritchie versus Bill White match. They could have used that time to show the last 6 or 7 minutes or so of the Flair Steamboat match. And I thought that would have made that angle even more effective, because even if they didn't have announcers there at the arena, they could have done a voiceover and they could have told you, hey, Flair and Steamboat have wrestled for 45 minutes. You know, their tank is empty. They're out of gas. And then they're getting jumped by Slaughter and Carnoodle. And Nelson, I just thought they could have used their time a little bit better than showing those two matches when they could have gave us fans a real treat of seeing Flair and Steamboat.
You know, I kind of agree with you there because, and I get it while you have the other matches on there, but we'll have to see how they treat things going forward, because very often back in the day, there would be an incident that would take place like that, that took place in Greensboro, and they would continue to show that tape for weeks because, well, the show was being bicycled around everywhere for weeks out. You have that match that is going to be taking place in different cities weeks out. So I wonder if they're going to show more of it because they did not show the beginning of the match where Sergeant Slaughter initially went out there and spoke to Flair and Steamboat. They didn't really show anything other than immediately Ric Flair, when the match was over, Flair is walking to the back. They are already, when they begin to show the film, they are already into the Marines and Slaughter attacking Steamboat, which obviously brings Flair back to try to fight those guys off. And it was always an interesting dynamic with Flair and with Steamboat as friends and with foes. It was always always an amazing relationship and one that Flair would have with Valentine as well, too. You know, Steamboat was always the face. Valentine was always the heel, and it was always Ric Flair kind of vacillating back and forth. And, you know, no matter which way he went, he was involved in a super team. It just happened to be what side he would be standing at the time. It would always be interesting on how they would kind of wheel him to and fro. And we're going to be seeing that coming up here in the next couple of months here on the broadcast as Ric Flair starts to go back to the dark side with Greg Valentine. But I kind of digress there away from the fact that, yeah, I'll be real interested to see if they decide to play more of that because you're right. I think it would have given more emotion. It would show how drained Flair and Steamboat were at the time when Slaughter came out there. Plus, just it would help add and give a little context to what Slaughter is saying about him going out there at the beginning, even though nobody would ever believe that Steamboat would say such horrible things to Sergeant Slaughter, that he would be so offended that he would have to attack him a little bit later on. But at least you would get that sort of conflict, and I agree. I think that was missing there. But you can't have everything. We'll see what comes up here in the next couple of weeks with that. But, Roman, it was good to get back and doing this show with you. And I really appreciate it.
Very therapeutic, if you want to call it that. I don't know if it was that way for you, Mike, but it was definitely for me. I needed this.
Oh, yeah. I did as well, too, and big time, everybody. So, again, appreciate everybody kind of sticking with us here the last couple of weeks. Hopefully we didn't lose all of our listenership here. We'll get some of you back. But for those of you, if you're unaware, again, Twitter and Facebook, no matter what kind of social media you got, just go to Mid-Atlantic Pod. Twitter and Facebook are the ones we use the most. We got features up there every single day. If you want to try to reach out to us, that's a great way to do it. You can also do so as well at midatlanticpod@gmail.com. You can drop us a line there. We have a Facebook group that is starting to grow. So we've got that going on. A bunch of other good stuff as well, too. So that's about it. I won't try to hype it anymore other than to say if you are a subscriber of this podcast through a service which offers ratings, we would very much ask that you leave a 5-star review for us. They seem to like those things very much. We like them too, but those services like them, and apparently it means a whole lot in getting the word out about the podcast. So if you could do that, we would very, very much appreciate it. Before we get out of here, I will add that this is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.